Welcome to the Movie Vault. I'm Ben.
And I'm Zach.
And today, we're going to what might be the place. And we're reviewing 1984's Stop Making Sense, featuring none other than...
I can't tell if you're trying to make heads. Me answer these questions.
No, I'm not. I'm just being slow. I'll edit out the cuts later and make it sound a lot better.
And then it'll be like, no, stop making sense.
Stop making sense. I'm trying to represent it as a very angular and, sort of... joint. I don't even know the right words.
Is that a new sweater?
Yeah, it is a new sweater. Nice. Patagonia.
I like it.
Emma got it at Root Insurance.
Oh, what's that?
I don't know. It's a company.
Did we just give them free advertising?
Yeah. Too? Well, don't get Root Insurance unless you're getting it through Hedman Anglin Agency, because they're an independent agency, so they may sell Root Insurance. I don't know for sure though.
Then Hedman Anglin Agency can point them.
Yeah. That's true. So today we are talking about a little bit, different category of movie than we normally do, although that's been a bit of a trend as we did our first silent film recently, and now we're doing our first concert film. Now, whether this is a concert film or a documentary, it was a little hard to tell. What I can tell you is that it is the highest rated documentary on Letterboxd, so it is a fan favorite, clearly. And it is a simple movie, I would say, directed by Jonathan Demme, who would go on to be most well known for making Silence of the Lambs, which is an Academy Award winning movie. But this was 7 years before that. He had apparently come off making his first hit movie, which was called like Marvin and Harrison, I want to say, but I'm double checking that because I don't know for sure.
We only give you the facts here at the Movie Vault.
I think it was Marvin. We'll just say it was Marvin and Harrison, something of that degree. Melvin and Howard. I got the names mixed up. But yeah, he would go on to make Silence of the Lambs, Philadelphia, and Rachel Gets Married. Anyway, he had been a huge fan of the Talking Heads since watching one of their concerts in 1979. And so it made sense that he wanted to make a movie. For their part, the Talking Heads really liked Melvin and Howard. So they were okay with him making this movie, especially after he presented his vision for it, which is that it would be a simple movie that would present pretty much just their physical performance. Interestingly, Stop Making Sense very rarely pans to the audience, with the exception of the end of the movie. There's not much audience reaction at all, to the point that if there weren't any claps, you wouldn't necessarily know if there was an audience at all. You don't really have a good grasp of how big the audience is either. But you kind of get the feeling it's played at a theater, which is true because it was filmed at the Hollywood Pantages Theater. And it was actually filmed over multiple days. So three different concerts were used in the film. So they did edit it together to an extent. So it can be thought of instead of just, it was not a straightforward just recording of a singular
concert.
Does
that take away from it?
I mean, you could ask, but I think you have to think of it more like it is a film. So they're trying to get, I'm sure they shot tons and tons of footage, and they're trying to present the band in like the best possible manner, which is what film is. So it's not necessarily authentic to the degree that, like, if you were to watch some of their other performances that are just like basically recorded performances of everything that happened in linear.
Well, that's probably why they didn't show the audience.
Yeah. The point that they made from what I read is that normally when they pan to an audience in a film like this, it wouldn't actually be the moment that they were reacting to. So it would be fake, like a fake reaction to like embellish the story. The concert film genre, I didn't know too much about. I guess Martin Scorsese had done a concert film prior to this, and I think it was like 1977 or the late 70s. There's a band called The Band, mm-hmm. And he filmed their last concert, and there's a film called The Last Waltz that he made from it. Yeah. I think it was a more traditional documentary, though, where they gave background on the band, and it was like presenting it in like a cinematic way, where it was like their final performance. So that's where the differences kind of diverge on Stop Making Sense. So anyway, before I go into the Talking Heads and all of that, what was your reaction as somebody who this was basically your first exposure to this band?
Oh, yeah, it was very energetic. I was kind of coming into it like with very, I told you this, with very low expectations, just so I could be blown away. And I was blown away. I thought it was awesome. I would love to have been there in person. It kind of made me jealous of everybody in the audience. But David Byrne, I read a comment on Letterboxd that said David Byrne is not a singer; he is a lifestyle. And I was like, that really represents kind of what I saw. And you said that sounds like a Letterboxd comment, which it does. But David Byrne's energy was just through the roof, and I think it carried through the performance pretty seamlessly. And he really didn't. I mean, he had no down moments. I mean, there was probably one song that he wasn't the lead singer in, right?
Yeah.
And it was when they did, it was when, what's her name? Tina came out?
Yeah, Tina's band with her husband.
That's her husband?
Chris. So Chris and Tina.
The drummer?
Chris the drummer and Tina are married. Mm-hmm. They had a band called the Tom Tom Club. And
oh, so they're kids. Wow.
Yeah.
I would be.
So they awesome. Performed, you kind of. I've listened to the album so many times that you can hear them say, "Hey, we're the Tom Tom Club." And then at the end of the song, they're going, "All right, we're going to say thank you. And then we're going to go back to being the Talking Heads." It's kind of funny if you listen to it enough. But yeah, that was like their most well-known song that they performed, which was Genius of Love. And
it was a little different style.
Yeah, it was definitely a different style. But I think a little bit more disco influenced.
Definitely disco, and like David Byrne's voice really reigns over the songs many right. times, and then a lot sometimes there will be instrumentals within the song. But Tina's voice was really in the background of the whole song.
So yeah,
it was pretty different.
And it was kind of funny because Chris France, who's the drummer, he had these just really kind of off the wall, like it was almost like singing and shouting at the same time.
Yeah.
You go, James Brown, James Brown. It was just like so weird. It was so funny. But it like fits the song. And there were some references to like people in the disco scene in from the 70s, which that was really big in New York. I don't know about them like enough to like really comment on their music, but it was obvious it was influencing them. But yeah, I'll give a little background on the Talking Heads and about like why I think they're such an important band in American history.
Well, why are they?
So the band starts all the way back at Rhode Island School of Design, and that's where David Byrne, Chris France, and Tina Weymouth met. And they started a band called the Artistics. Anyway, after this, they changed their name to the Talking Heads, and then they moved to New York, which was super important. New York in the mid to late 70s was like the burgeoning scene of the U.S. punk scene or the New York punk scene. Bands that came out from this era that are very were very important were the Ramones, who are probably like the most straightforward punk band. You might know Blitzkrieg Bop. It's at the end of Spider-Man Homecoming. They also had a bunch of like, you know, punk in the style of the Ramones is basically like pop music played really fast and loud. And they were synonymously at the same time, or I don't know if synonymously is the right word, but at the same time or a little bit earlier, there was also the UK punk scene.
Simultaneously.
There's the right word.
You did almost. Yeah, never mind. Continue.
Yeah. Synonymously is a different, would be used in a different context. But simultaneously in the UK, the Sex Pistols and the Clash had hit big over there, and I think that influence traveled across the ocean. So in 1977, the Talking Heads released their first album, Talking Heads 77, which is where their most famous song to this day comes from, and that's Psycho Killer, which is the opener on Stop Making Sense. I would say of all the Talking Heads songs, Psycho Killer is the one that I think most people would have heard at some point in their life. It's very
Psycho Killer.
It's still like a, it's definitely, you can hear the punk influence a lot. But what I'll tell you, as someone who for most of time knew Talking Heads basically based on that song, it created like a feeling of, it didn't help me understand what the band was like overall. Like, now that I've like explored more of their music, I understand how that style that they played on Talking Heads 7-7 like influenced later on. But like, I don't think I quite understood what the band was trying to do, simply by listening to that song. So then they collaborated with British producer Brian Eno, who is, you could go on a whole rabbit hole about Brian Eno, but he is known especially for like making ambient music. I've listened to a couple of his albums, and they're very, you know, well known. Another Green World is the big one. And then there's like Ambient One, Music for Airports. Those are big ones. They're very like minimalistic, kind of deconstructive. So essentially, he's a very experimental guy. He got his start with Roxy Music, I believe, who would go on to have their own sort of successful career. So all these people, and so he came on board, and he and Byrne kind of started developing the sound of Talking Heads more on their albums, more songs about buildings and food, and then Fear of Music. And finally, in 1980, they hit probably what is their critical peak with Remain in Light. And Remain in Light was an album where Eno and Byrne went to the studio. They would like isolate sounds and record them, and then they would like mix them together, and then like kind of cycle them over and over again. And then they had all these Afrobeat influences, and it's like very rhythmic and just a lot different from the punk style that they had kind of started out with. So much more experimental. And on that album, the song Once in a Lifetime was the huge hit. That's probably,
which is my favorite.
Yeah, probably their second most well-known song. Another song that a lot of people would recognize if they heard it. It's very odd, and I still don't quite.
Isn't it the one where it's like, what if that is not your house? What if that is not your wife?
This is not my house. This is not my beautiful house. This is not my beautiful wife. Let's sing the days go by. And it has all this imagery about like water and like confusion. And it kind of, throughout Talking Heads, they have the backing music kind of changes. But like David Byrne's vision, and his lyrics, which I still haven't explored fully, they're sort of like on the edge of paranoia. He talks about the government a lot. He talks about, you know, there's these songs where he's like, I remember there's a song on Talking Heads 7-7 called The Book I Read. He goes, just thinking about the book I read. And it's just like very strange. He's like, but it's hypnotic, like the way his voice sounds.
That's a good adjective. I also think for him, he's saying like the most mundane things that we would never sing about, because we're always singing these different specific words. But he's using like sentences that don't rhyme in a chorus, in his verses and everything. And then he's also just stuff that doesn't match. It's very like grabbing different pieces from here and there, but it feels hypnotic because of repetition. And many of these songs are so much repetition of like these random phrases that he's saying. So to the point where like you feel like there's a deeper message going on, and there usually is, from some of the songs that I've researched. But like, you're right, it did change from the time Psycho Killer came out to like some of the songs that were in this film specifically. What album was this based off of again?
The
newest one that came out. Sorry,
he used multiple. I have not crossed all of the songs back to which albums they came from, but most of the albums that they released up to the point were represented. But their latest album, which was at that point Speaking in Tongues, was probably had the most songs.
And that one had the African influence.
Yeah, it was the most African influence. And
that's what I'm saying. Like, he's mixing genres in a way that is so interesting.
Yeah, and speaking in tongues also probably had a little bit more of a like kind of new wave, which they would have been already maybe considered new wave somewhat already, but like even more so with the synthesizers and stuff. Yeah. And the fact is, this is a four-piece band, but like within one of the things they did was they kept adding instruments and band members. And that's one of the cool things about the concert. But that kind of stops after a while because they get everyone on. By the time they perform like Slippery People, which is like the fifth or sixth song, because they need everyone, because that's from the latest album where they're doing all the Afrobeat stuff. And they need somebody who's on the drum set that's more of like African tribal drums, djembes, things like that. And
some background singers.
And they have background singers and... they have like multiple people on the synthesizers, I think. It's amazing. Very complex.
I loved watching the background singers just do whatever when they weren't needed, because they were only needed for about half the songs by the time they were up there.
It was like the ones that were more gospel influenced almost, and where they had more backing vocals.
Their influence on a song would be like,
And then they had these complex dance parts.
That's what I'm saying. There was no dull moment. Every single... I don't even know if it was choreographed.
It was choreographed.
Really?
I would need to research more, but from like the interviews I've watched and stuff, it was like everything was like practiced and rehearsed for this concert.
That takes away from me.
I don't think it does.
Okay.
Because I think that fits with David Byrne's vision and character for his music. Like everything is like very meticulous in his world. And you can see that in the music. Like the music itself is very planned, but it doesn't, but the thing that makes it okay is because if it was just choreographed and execution, you still wouldn't, there's this like extra level of like joy that you can see on the performers. I think that's the authentic part. So that's what I would argue. The reason that this stands out above like most people performing music is because you get a sense that this is a group of people who like genuinely enjoyed at least this part of their career, what they were doing, and just loved being there and performing music, and they were good at it, and they had come up with a system that was that everyone was a key, like everyone had an integral role, even though yes, people point to Byrne and are like, he is the figure that is like kind of keeping everything together. But at the same time, everybody played a part. If it was just David Byrne on stage singing Psycho Killer, it would have been cool, but it would not have been what it was with the 16 people on stage or whatever.
Yeah.
Even the people that from the who were moving the sets around were like part of the show. Yeah,
they came out at the
end. Even the lamp was part of the show.
Yeah, that was great. That was great. I think in one of the after things he says, what did he say about writing a love song to a lamp?
Oh, that's a great quote. I'll have to pull it up.
Well, you're finding that. I think that was what I was trying to express earlier. You can tell that these people love what they do, and they love the songs that they're singing, and you could tell that they even love each other because they would interact with each other on stage, either when they weren't doing a part or when there was instrumentals. In between some of the verses, of course, and they would just start dancing with each other. Like someone would walk across the stage from their spot, because everybody had a spot. And then one guy walked across the entire stage, went to the back, and then like was starting to like do these weird dances with the girls that were the background singers. And I was just thinking, like, wow, that's all I thought was wow.
Yeah.
And then David Byrne's running around the set at one point. He's just running around and around.
Yeah. I think that was during Life During Wartime.
I think, yeah. I don't know. Was this good camera work or not? I don't know.
I mean, I having watched it once, I think it was what it needed to be.
Sure.
I think maybe people, now that Jonathan Demme has like ascended from this movie, you kind of wonder whether it's like, oh, Jonathan Demme did it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it was like, I think what you would say is that he didn't overdo anything. Okay. He let the talking heads be themselves instead of trying to do like fancy things with the camera. So I guess you could say that's a strength in one regard. The David Byrne quote is, I try to write about small things, paper, animals, a house. Love is kind of big. I have written a love song though. In this film, I sing it to a lamp.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I was also saying. He's just singing about the most mundane things, and it works really well.
Yeah,
because he questions the mundanity of life almost.
Yeah, because I was reading the lyrics to Once in a Lifetime. So the chorus goes, letting the days go by, letting the water hold me down, letting the days go by, water flowing underground, into the blue again after the money's gone, once in a lifetime, water flowing underground. So if you read that like isolated, you're like, what in the world does that mean? So later in the song, during one of the verses, he says, water dissolving and water removing. There is water at the bottom of the ocean. Under the water, carry the water. Remove the water from the bottom of the ocean. Water dissolving and water removing. And so it's like this theme, like I thought about that. I hadn't thought about it because you get so caught up in the parts that are like, you may ask yourself, what is that beautiful house? Where does that highway go? Am I right or am I wrong? Like, he asks these questions, but then I'm like, what is this other part of the song that's like about, like with all this symbolism about water? Because that's the chorus of the song that repeats over and over again. You know, letting the days go by, water flowing underground. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, there is water everywhere, and there's water, it cycles. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like he's comparing that to the cycle of life. But it's also like questioning, like, yeah, what is your purpose? Why do you have this house? Why do you have this wife? What are you doing? Like, what, like, are you just
water's still gonna run?
Are you just gonna cycle? But then you wonder whether, you know, he's saying like the once in a lifetime moniker is like, but yes, you only get one lifetime, even though all these things are cycling.
Yeah, and you have songs like that really do have deeper meanings, and then you have songs like Burning Down the House, which I read that he basically just put words in there that sounded good.
And it is, it's like a party song.
Yeah,
burning down the house.
Yeah, so it's really all over the place, and I guess that,
right, and like life during wartime, I think is like a fictional kind of story about like what it would be like to live during a war. If you listen to the lyrics, mm-hmm. it's just like all these phrases that are like would make sense if you're in a time of war. What you're like, why would in 1979 what was happening that would make, you know, he's like, heard of a van that's loaded with weapons, packed up and ready to go. Mm-hmm. And he just like,
this ain't no party, this ain't no disco, this ain't no fooling around.
And then of course he references, it's interesting, like he says, this ain't no mud club or CBGB. And the CBGB is the club that the punk scene started from, essentially. So Television and Talking Heads and these bands performed at CBGB, and that was like a big deal. So it's weird, like, time for him to reference it, kind of, but it was a huge, so like the big bands from that era, so I don't miss any of them, were Ramones, Television, Patti Smith, Blondie, Madonna, and Talking Heads. And they all kind of went in different directions. Blondie, of course, is like, has a lot of staying power. Television is a band that I've also gotten into recently, and they have like one really good album, Marquee Moon, but like I feel like they've kind of would be less known. Patti Smith, you know, some people, she also doesn't have as much staying power. Madonna went on to do her thing. It was more of a punk or like post-punk place.
Was Madonna ever as big as Taylor Swift is now?
Yes, I would argue yes.
Seriously?
She was huge.
I would argue no. I think if Taylor Swift,
I think Taylor Swift is bigger though.
I think Taylor Swift could put in a bid for presidency and win right now.
Yeah, you're right. I think Taylor Swift is a little bigger. I don't like that, but I look
at a news app every morning. She has been in the headlines on the front page of the news app for random things like the last 2 weeks.
That's crazy.
It's just insane.
Yeah, I'm sick of it. And yesterday when she announced a new album.
She did?
Immediately.
Oh, gosh.
There were like 10 people who posted about it on the Instagram within like, and this was within like 20 minutes.
Oh, my goodness.
Of it coming out.
I mean, only 10 in the world?
No, 10 of the people I follow. I only follow about 600 people. And, you know, you have to factor in the accounts that don't actually exist anymore and the amount of people who don't actually post on Instagram or maybe don't use it anymore.
Or your circle's not really liking Taylor Swift that much, which is probably true.
Yeah, but like there's still so many people who...
10 out of 600. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Madonna. Yeah, big. So, I mean, Talking Heads had everything going for them. And did they have any rocky parts in their time as Talking Heads? I don't know.
Yeah, so like this is kind of it for the Talking Heads. Like, I keep calling them the four Talking Heads. This is the culmination of everything that they did. And it really, you know, I actually haven't taken the time to listen to the albums after this because they're not as critically acclaimed. I probably will at some point in my life. But they did have another hit on their next album, which I think was called Little Creatures. And it was called And She Was. And it's a good song. Like, it's catchy. But it's definitely not as compared to, like, Once in a Lifetime and Cross-Eyed and Painless and some of the songs from Remain. Like it's not as ambitious. I think David Byrne started to get more interested in making films and doing stuff with film. And what happened was, and this happens with people like Byrne who are so, I don't even know the right word. They're sort of like a lightning rod for attention, and like everything kind of circulates around him from a creative standpoint. Then some of the other band members start thinking that they aren't getting enough credit. And I think he and Tina especially started to butt heads over the direction of the band. And they did go on, I think, until 1991. And then after that, they split up and it was kind of like, final. Now they
it's tough because David Byrne really is the face. He's the reason they're up.
Yeah, and it's not like David Byrne hasn't necessarily done anything in his solo career that would like match. I don't know about his filmmaking career, but in his solo musician career, I don't think he's done anything that has matched what he did with the Talking Heads. But that's not entirely surprising because normally, the natural progression of bands is that there's this sort of like 5 to 8 year window that you're kind of at your creative peak. For the Talking Heads, it was 1977 to 1984. And then unfortunately, like for most people, it's hard. You kind of have to like reinvent yourself at that point. And if you don't do the reinvention correct, it can really like cause friction in the band. Because you just can't keep doing the same thing over and over again, which is not necessarily what the Talking Heads did. I just think the direction they went in, when they were at their creative peak, they were at their highest level of ambition, or at least David Byrne was. And then when they kind of fell apart, I think the ambition was more of a filmmaking direction. There was like a album they did that was supposed to be associated with a film.
Yes.
And it didn't. I don't think that panned out, and that wasn't what the band wanted either. So
I think there were actually more. There were a couple films that he did the music for.
Yeah. And you can see from the ratings, not that ratings are everything, but like they kind of tanked as each album progressed on.
Yeah.
So it is what it is. But I think most bands would be, I was thinking about this. I was like, I have no musical talent, but if I did, it'd be kind of sad because I could never do Stop Making Sense. That's what I was like, it's just
once in a lifetime.
Yeah. It doesn't, stuff like that does not happen very often. And I know I got very obsessed with this band. So, you know, I could be looking at some things with rose colored glasses, or like, since I really connect with most of the songs, it's easier to be like, the performances were amazing.
You connected with questioning your house and wife and,
well, not necessarily for more of a musical sense.
Okay.
I guess you should maybe question those things occasionally, but
would
not
you
very
say,
often.
Would you use a younger lingo of vibe? Did you vibe with the song?
No, I would not say vibe with the song.
What would you say?
I connect with the song.
Connect, okay.
Yeah, it clicks.
Clicked.
I like to think of music as like clicks.
Okay.
Like, because Talking Heads, I knew about this band for a long time.
Yeah.
And it never clicked. I remember in July, I tried to listen to Remain in Light again. It didn't click. But for some reason,
the right place, the right time. So it's,
yeah,
it's,
I'll,
it's
track
about
the
your phase of life and the music itself.
Yeah. What actually made it click is, for some reason in the fall, I was like, okay, I'm going to listen to Remain in Light. And I was like, okay, I like this. Some of the songs, there's actually one of the songs, Izimbra, was actually cut out from the version of Stop Making Sense that we watched. And they included it in the A24 one, which we can't watch yet because it's not out on streaming. So like the remastered version has a couple extra songs.
I didn't know that.
Okay. I didn't know that either until I looked it up.
It was
up.
In theaters too. We should have saw it.
I know. That, and that
should have been
the
one we reviewed.
I think the reason that I gave Talking Heads another chance was because I had seen the performances, like clips of the performances, and it intrigued me. And I was seeing people being like so excited about going to the theater and watching this, and I was like, what is this? Like, what is Stop Making Sense?
Well, what's happened, Ben, in the last maybe 5 years or so is they are starting to make either origin stories or concert films based off of these big bands of the past, like Bohemian Rhapsody or what's Elton John's film that came out.
So like, oh, Rocket Man.
And yeah, it brings back nostalgia for the people who have listened to it, and it introduces them almost to a new generation so that
right,
they're on the billboards again. Like Bohemian Rhapsody was like number five of whatever that year, what if it was 2018 or 19 or 2020 when it came out. Bohemian Rhapsody, the song, was number five on the billboards for that year, and it's like, if it can go up there again and again and again, they should just keep making these films. So it's lucrative, but for people who have listened to it a lot and like that nobody else knows who they are, it's not as fun. So now if, you know, tons more people, me, the novices of the world, know about Talking Heads now because of these big movements that are happening in the music world.
And it is interesting because these bands, it's easier to know about a lot more different types of music. And if you look at the numbers, you're like, Talking Heads is a popular band. Like, their most listened to song has 400 million streams, and they have a couple other songs in the 100 and 200 million stream range. You're like, that's a lot. But at the same time, they're still kind of niche things. So, like, not everyone knows about them. And I would say that the music is pretty accessible, but David Byrne's voice, like I said, it's hypnotic, but it's not necessarily like the traditional.
Oh yeah, he's no Madonna.
Songs. He's not Jeff Buckley. He's not Madonna.
He's better than Taylor Swift. He's no Madonna.
Yeah. So once you kind of understand, and I was watching him sing these songs, and them sound like almost exactly like they sound in the studio, and I was like, that's how you know he's good, because some people like can't recapture what they do in the studio with
their vocals. Say though, his vocal range is pretty good. Like, he'll days go by.
Yeah, that's true. He does have a very good vocal range. He can hold lyrics for a long time. It's just like the spastic energy.
Spastic is a great word. You're good with adjectives today, because he was just shaking and trying to vaporize himself as he was singing in one of those songs.
Yeah, because a whole aspect of this is just the performative aspect of the... I'm just using words multiple times. The performative aspect of the performance. But...
but you're good with adjectives tonight.
Once you give me a compliment, I stop knowing words. But... yeah, I mean, the props and stuff, of course. I always just love the big suit. Of course... once you've seen it a couple times, you might be like, it's just a big suit. Like, it's kind of funny, but whatever. But it's just the What's idea the big that deal? you would think about, like, doing something like that.
It's fitting.
Richard Brody from The New Yorker says that it might be a Playtime reference, which I'm like, that might be a stretch. Playtime's a French movie. I'm like, that might be a little bit of a stretch that it's, like, a reference to that specific movie.
David Byrne doesn't reference anything.
Yeah, well, I mean, not that we know of.
I mean,
could have been influenced by it and not told anyone.
I'm saying even in his songs, like, he's not talking about the Bee Gees or anybody in his song.
No,
in
he's
any
not.
Of the songs.
None no, he's not. but that's just what Richard Brody hypothesized. But then there's also The Lamp, and then I think there's just a few moments. I always thought about this album. I've listened to it so many times. I was even listening again today on part of my run. Kind of skipping through to my favorite songs. Like, to me, the whole thing built to, like, Life During Wartime, and that song was just like so much energy. And then that's the when they're all running, and then he runs around the stage, and you're like, you get this feeling that they don't want any empty space. Everything has to be movement. But then there was even moments I noticed as I was re-listening to it again. When Chris France comes on, it's the third song, which is Thank You for Sending Me an Angel. And I was just noticing that the drums are like a huge part of that song. And I'm like, Chris France is the drummer. And he comes on and they pick a song that's like drumming is like a big aspect of. And I was like, oh, that's I didn't notice that before. And the next song, Jonathan Richman comes on. And I think that's Found a Job. So they have more guitar parts in that song. But there's just these little moments that you start to appreciate over time. And even like the one where he like waves his arms.
Yeah, that one's good.
And then when he has the big suit, he's like, he also has these big pants and he's like doing this. Oh, and
David
that.
Byrne's left leg has got to be stronger or maybe skinnier, lost more body fat than his right leg. Because he was shaking that left leg for like the entire concert.
Yeah, and then during Once in a Lifetime, he says, same as it ever was. And he just hits his head over and over again. Same as it ever was. You're like, what? And like, how many things can you think of to do? It's intriguing, and I'm sure since I only really watched the whole thing once, there's some of the songs I've watched multiple times on clips, but anyway, do you have any thoughts on Byrne's performance?
Kind of like what I just said, just this guy's got more energy than anyone I've ever seen in a concert. Yeah, maybe one day he'll be in a concert with Taylor Swift.
That would be interesting. So critic Pauline Kael had some things to say about this movie.
Well, how up in the world is Pauline?
She is like the real deal.
Really?
Before Roger Ebert, it was Pauline Kael.
Okay.
You know Tarantino's next movie about the film critic? Mm-hmm. It's hypothesized that it's about Pauline Kael. Okay. Although it sounded from the last synopsis that it wasn't going to be. But she has a big reputation in that film critic community, but she said the film was close to perfection and described Talking Heads frontman David Byrne as a stupefying performer, and she said he described his like jerky long necks mechanical man movements. He's like parodying himself almost. He just says it's like hollow-eyed frosty verve. I'm like, this is how you be a good film critic, I guess, is you just learn all these adjectives. Starting making up stuff, essentially. Okay. It's like word vomit.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is like the style of music that that not necessarily just Talking Heads, but like even from like liking Donnie Darko, a lot of the bands that are in that movie are like in this new wave sort of like synthesizer. They're coming off of punk, which punk itself was a very limited genre with what you could do with it. Once the Sex Pistols and the Ramones did it, nobody else could do it anymore because that's all you could do with it. But once post-punk and new wave happened, there was just so much more room for like using this idea of like pop, like just changing pop music and using this new technology of synthesizers and stuff. And I find it to be I find myself wishing that there were more bands nowadays that could capture the energy, but maybe it's just because we know which bands are good and which bands are bad because of time, like we've said about other stuff.
Like you said, even if you were good and musically talented, you could still never do it.
Yeah.
It's once in a lifetime.
Once in a lifetime. So, do you have any closing thoughts on Stop Making Sense?
Well, it disappoints me a little bit that it was all staged. But, I mean, obviously it was all staged. There were a lot of moving parts.
There could have been, like, moments that were not planned. I don't know for sure.
I don't know. I liked it. Yeah. That's all I have to say.
And for me, I'd say this has been an obsession of mine since about November, this album in particular. And it hasn't gotten old yet. I'm was just entranced by the performance. And I'd encourage anybody who's trying to be a performer not to copy David Byrne, because obviously not everyone's David Byrne, they shouldn't be him, but to just look at
not everybody, you mean nobody.
Yeah, nobody is really David Byrne, but to just look at his energy and look at what worked
and their emotions. Concert. Love what you do.
Yeah, so. Yeah, that's the main thing. This and I feel bad for talking so much, but
no, you're good. I have to go to the bathroom really
I'm
bad.
I am the talking head in this moment.
You are.
So, but with that, go listen to Talking Heads. My favorite album of theirs is probably... I don't know. I can't pick one. They're all good. So, it's Stop Making Sense is my favorite.
Nice.
So, that's easy.
Their movie album.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, with that, I will close the vault.
All right.
Adios. Letting the days go by.
Na, 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 na.